no relationships to disclose. That's very unfortunate because I would love to have some relationships to disclose, especially if they funded me, but unfortunately, I have none to disclose. Okay, the story I'm going to try to tell you today can be summarized very quickly. It is that the economy is the central source of health and life expectancy in the world. In developing countries and industrialized countries, in traditional societies and modern societies, you name the society, the economy, the behavior of the economy, its levels of employment, its economic growth pattern, the degree to which its small businesses prosper, the degree to which there is economic equality, these are the central facts of health in the world. And they parallel what is the central finding of epidemiology in virtually all of our societies, which is that socioeconomic status is the principal predictor of morbidity and mortality. The inverse relationship between morbidity and mortality and socioeconomic status, which has to do with income, occupational status, and education. And this can now be seen throughout the world in virtually all countries, and it probably has always been true. The problem is that in recent years we have forgotten about this relationship, especially as it pertains to the industrialized societies. We don't believe it exists anymore, and yet it continues to be the single most powerful factor that affects all of our societies. And in the case of the developing countries where we do tend to believe it, interestingly enough, in the last few years, a few factors have emerged to try to destroy this relationship. And these are the most powerful factors in the world now affecting the relationship between the economy and health. The most important factor is the birth rate, which parallels the whole issue that has been discussed before me on the status of women. And the second issue is HIV. And this is what I'm going to try to show you this morning. Oh, I'm sorry, I should go back. This is a list of factors that tell you in summary why it is necessary, why it is logically necessary that the economy is the foundation of health throughout the world. It runs from issues of management of basic needs, nutrition, water, sanitation, housing, climate control, transportation, the fundamentals of health care, the capacity and the political will to control population size, the alleviation of poverty, technological developments in education, which improve productivity and reduce problems of occupational health and safety, and environmental toxins, the use of high technology in the care of chronic and degenerative diseases, the use of resources to manage psychological stress. Very little emphasis in our international health work on mental health. It is fundamental both in the developing societies and certainly in the industrialized societies, and the evidence is mounting in many journals just devoted to those issues. And finally, and altogether, the power and opportunity to alter individuals' and society's standard of living, career trajectories, and the human and physical environments. And again, I want to just make reference to the previous speakers, all of whom touched, some directly, some indirectly, on the fundamental matter of the status of women. This is deeply embedded in the whole issue of economic development. Obviously, you do not find such stringent matters of the status of women as you get to higher levels of development. There are caveats to this, as has been pointed out, in certain types of ideological and religious bases of society. But fundamentally, as we move through the process of industrialization, we find a considerably greater status of women, continually reduced emphasis on the pure role of women in reproduction, and much of the whole problem changes when we examine it in this way. I'm going to, in the interest of time, I'm going to take you to just quickly a little bit of statistical work. I know you all love statistical work. just to point out, however, but there are caveats to some of these general propositions, especially in the industrialized world and emerging now in the developing world as well. All is not absolutely rosy with economic development. With certain levels of economic development, we have all heard we need to watch levels of alcohol and tobacco consumption, animal fat consumption, carbohydrate consumption, which affect basically the chronic diseases, the cardiovascular diseases and the malignancies, high consumption of overall calories, declines in physical mobility, all of these things you know perfectly well. from your exposure to public health issues. The point is, in creating a model of world health, and this is what this story is about, we need to take these factors into consideration. What do we know now? What we have known, or what we have thought we do, item one, is that there exists a logarithmic relationship, I'll explain to you what that means in a moment, between income and wealth per capita, the GDP per capita, and life expectancy for the world. So let's say 150 to 200 countries, the world of countries. The point is, however, that while the initial scholars who looked at these relationships talked about there being a logarithmic relationship, they never measured it. And in not measuring it, they have confused us all to practically the present day so that none of us believes it. And I'll show you why in just a moment. This is a picture of the relationship between GDP per capita on the horizontal axis and life expectancy in the year 1955. So you can see a strong upward trajectory, which the eye tells you, and the eye confuses you, confuses me anyway, because it looks as though most of the world is earning less than $3,000, and you're seeing something like a straight line, and you don't know whether that's a lot of random noise or whether there's actually a relationship there that exists and is so powerful that even $1 is going to increase the length of a life. The rest of the impression is that as we go into the more highly developed countries in 1955, the relationship disappears. And this is what most scholars believe is true to the present day. But those same scholars told us that there was a logarithmic relationship, but never estimated it. If you estimate it, it turns out that with one variable, just income and wealth, the GDP per capita, we are able to explain among 135 countries over half of the variance in life expectation. And this is what the picture looks like. And you see on the right here, these are some of the oil-rich Arab countries, are outliers. But apart from that, you can see something like an upward-moving sausage at about a 45-degree angle. And that itself accounts for about 60 to 70% of the variation in life expectancy across all the world's countries, even in 1955. Going a little further, we go to 1960, same relationship. Just what happens to the, watch what happens to the picture. It still has this 45-degree angle, but even the Arab countries, oil-rich countries on the right, are beginning to shift a little bit now to the left, and we are increasing our explanation of variance to about 60%. Here we are at about 59% in 1965. Same relationship, getting a little bit stronger. That is to say, the countries of the world are falling into this general coherent perspective where you are seeing almost a linear relationship between income and wealth and life expectancy. 1970, the relationship is now at 60% explanation of variance. You see how it's becoming more and more coherent. 1975, a very important year. We're now at nearly 67% of the variance explained. 1980, 71% explained. The world is now forming what is almost a complete trajectory around this 45-degree angle. 1985, we are now explaining 78% of the variance in 150 countries. Even the oil-rich countries are now part of the picture. The world is consolidating as we come into the period of the 1980s and 1990s. All of a sudden, 1990, we begin to lose some explanation of variance. Oh, I'm sorry. This is the picture back to what you will normally see in your international health textbooks when you turn to the economics and health section, which I'm sure you all do when you teach your classes, you see that kind of a picture. The eye seems to think there's an L shape there. It explains nothing. Because the written text underneath will say, you know, ladies and gentlemen, there's a logarithmic relationship here, but they don't estimate it. This is what happens when you estimate it. 80% of the variance is explained. 80% of the variance leaves 20% of the variance among 150 countries in life expectation, 156 at this point. That's what the picture looks like. We're coming now to the peak of time in which this relationship was consolidated for the world. We're now going into 1995, and the relationship is beginning to break apart a little bit. 1995. What's happening is you're developing countries which were coherent in this straight line. It looks as though they've been hit by an asteroid, and they're beginning to break apart. The year 2000, break apart a little bit more. The upper level countries, from about age 65 and 70 and above, stay coherent. The prediction is quite as precise as it used to be. The developing countries are falling apart in terms of the predictability of the GDP. 2005, even greater damage. The developing countries, the true developing countries, under average age 65 to 70, are completely breaking apart. And now 2008, the year of the Great Recession, where the relationship still exists. Now we look at what our textbook shows. This is what the reality shows. The developing countries are now completely broken apart in terms of the effect of the GDP. The GDP is no longer protective for the developing countries, but remains powerfully protective at the level of almost 80 to 90% of the variance explained in the countries with life expectancy over 70. I'm going to skip these numbers, they'll bore you a little bit. Now I'm going to show you what happens when we have a true model, not just one variable, but the usual factors that explain mortality across the world. This has approximately 130 countries, and here are the predictive variables. The most important factor predicting, predicting life expectancy is the log GDP at a beta of 46. Following that is the crude fertility rate. The higher the birth rate in the country, the higher the death rate. And this death rate is not exclusively attuned to newborns and 1 to 4s. It covers the entire society. It means that when we have a very young society of under 15-year-olds, the entire society now loses the ability of much of that part of the population to work, and simply has to feed them. It has to keep up with the process of feeding them over and over and over again. The women of the society, many of them who are engaged in this process, are almost exclusively concerned with children. They are unable to work. They're unable to achieve any other status in society. We have a society that is based on births, essentially, in pure Malthusian demographic terms. Third most important factor, the HIV epidemic, which has decimated the working populations of many of the developing countries. These two factors for the developing countries, the crude fertility rate and HIV prevalence, has destroyed the ability of the GDP to improve the lot of the people of developing countries to this day. What else do we find that's important? Public health expenditures, not total health expenditures. But that part of health expenditure supported by government has an effect on improving life expectancy, even in the industrialized countries. The Gini Index, which is the index of economic inequality, not as powerful as the GDP, but very important, particularly in countries like the United States. And in the developing countries where you
transitional populations, many of the issues that the panel discussed. Tobacco is becoming very important in the developing countries. Alcohol is extremely important, even in the developing countries, and is very much concerned with many of these issues of violence against women, against other sexual orientations, and so on. A very interesting finding is that to the extent that a population engages largely in manufacturing, we introduce a lot of the occupational health issues, toxins, accidents that are peculiar to a certain stage of development. This is very damaging. When we get into countries with life expectancy over 70, what dominates, as in our country, of course, here, the services industries, health, education, welfare, finance, and so on and so on, eliminates most of the issue, or very much of the issue, of industrial toxins, much of the issue of occupational health and safety. The very important issue is the employment, especially of men, and we can talk about this later if you wish, in both industrial and developing countries. And finally, for some reasons that I don't quite understand, there is some benefit of being a citizen of a country in Latin America. Do I want to say anything else about that? Yes, this is what the picture looks like.
Okay.
Namely, what we have is the actual mortality, the actual life expectancy from countries as high. The key country is still Japan. By the way, in 2008, Japan lost the status in its males of the highest level of life expectancy. Its females still do occupy that position. But there has been a major shift in the position of countries in their life expectancy due to the Great Recession. These are new findings that I'm just pointing out in this session. But from Zimbabwe, at close to the very bottom, to Japan at the very top, this is a prediction equation taking into account the variables you saw, in which we can run as from 45 to close to 83, 84 years of age, a distance of about 40 years, accounted for essentially by these variables. Essential message is the factors that intrude on the developing country's life expectation have been, as I said, the birth rate, largely, and HIV. Both of these things are normally taken care of as a result of the process of development. If you want to discuss the birth rate, we can do that a little bit later, but in the interest of time, I will leave that. In HIV, the case is much simpler. We have the potential for drug rehabilitation. In the industrialized countries, we do not have it in the developing world as yet. Final summary. If we want to understand why we are successful or not successful in international health with all of our programs, is that they require financing. No financing, no programs, no success, no activity, no improvement. The financing has to come from somewhere. In the industrialized countries, it's there. In the developing countries, it's not. End of story. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much, Dr. Brenner. I think we all learned a lot from